Test, test. This is a test of the trams. Test tram 1. Test tram 2. Preparing for an interview with Mr. Robert Church in Fort Valley, Georgia, Fort Valley State. And his predecessor founded the Ham and Egg Shows in Georgia. I'll be doing an interview with Mr. Church in his home in Fort Valley on Thursday, April 8th, 2004. Laurie Summers, field worker for the South Georgia Folklife Project. Test, 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 test. Test, test, test.
I was not the first county agent in Peach County.
Is that a mistake there?
I don't know whether it's on here or not, but I noticed that in the one that they gave me.
Right, here we go. I'm just checking the levels here, if you'll give me. What I thought we would do, just to kind of, and I usually do this on all of the interviews, is I have this little paper. I'll just fill this out on you just so when I can, here, let me get that out of the way so that doesn't get in your way here. I'll get all the everything spelled right. Whoops, don't want that on so loud. And I'll make sure you just talk. Is this loud enough for me to talk? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
And you just use a comfortable level for your voice, and I'll just get it here. I got to turn me down a little, just a minute. Let me see, which one am I on? I'm on the left. Let's see, inside, this is what I got to turn me down. Okay. So I'm going to just write down, it's Robert Church, 901 Carver, and we're in Peach County, is that right?
That's right.
And may I ask your birth date?
92609.
And you were born, you said, in Athens?
Yes, in Clark County, Athens, Georgia.
And what title do you use to describe yourself in terms of your career? I know you said you started out in vocational agriculture. Would you, extension, what title should I use?
At that time, in 1938, our title was, for extension, was Negro County Agent.
Okay. Okay. And when you retired in what year did that say?
1969.
Okay. And was the title the same at that point?
I was associate county agent at that time.
Okay. And were there any agricultural or other organizations related to your work that I might mention?
4-H Club.
4-H Club, okay. All right, test, test, test. Yeah. I think that ought to do it. So are you comfortable?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to get my notepad here, and then I'm going to... So just tell me a little bit. I'm going to take this back so I get the name right here. I keep wanting to call him Mr. Otis, but that's his first name, so it's Mr. O'Neill. You said... You came to Fort Valley in 1948, and you, at that time, you were the, your first position here was as the Negro County agent, is
My
that
first
right?
position, that was the title that when I began in in 38.
Oh, 1938, that's what you said. So when you came here, what was your title?
I believe it was changed after I came here to associate county agent. Okay. That's what I retired in, okay. Associate county agent.
Okay. And tell me about Mr. O'Neill, who had founded the Ham and Egg Shows.
Mr. O'Neill was the first county agent in Peach County. Mm-hmm. He came here in 1916.
And at that time, I assume the system was segregated, is that right?
It was segregated, yeah.
And what do you know from what you recall from him talking to you directly about starting the Ham and Egg Show? Why did he do that?
When we were first hired or given a position, we were just given a position, you go out there and make your way. Mm-hmm. Mr. O'Neill, in traveling around through the county, he observed that people were not curing meat properly. They were not did not have enough for the family, and he encouraged them to improve their quality of meat that they produced, and he taught them how to cure it, etc. He tells the story of going to around and is making his rounds through the county visiting black farmers. He asked them how much meat they had. They show him what they had in the smokehouse for supporting the family. And they went from one to the other and saw one or two pieces of meat, poor quality, poorly trimmed, et cetera. Then he went to another farmer and he found that this farmer had all of his needs for his family. It was well cured, et cetera. So he asked this man to let the other folk come and see his meat, see what he was doing, what kind of program that he had in that field. So the man said, No. They come here and see my meat. They come back at night and may relieve. So Mr. O'Neill got the idea if he could bring all of them together and have a demonstration and show them and let them all bring it to one place and show it. And that was Fort Valley State. What is Fort Valley State University now? It was Fort Valley. I believe it was High and Industrial at that time. And from there, interest began to improve, and they began to compete against each other and see who could bring the best one, best ham, or the best shoulder, or the best at home with demonstration agent, Mrs. Margaret Toomer was his home demonstration agent. And she worked with the ladies in preserving this, you know, what we call the scraps of making sausage and canning pork chops and things of that kind. And then it just, he was a friend of Mr. W.T. Anderson, who was the owner of the Macon Telegraph. Mr. Anderson gave him publicity, and he was interested in it, and he gave prizes, and he always bought the prize ham, etc. And from then it just grew to be a big, big affair. Got all kinds of publicity from Life magazine to Reader's Digest, Atlanta Constitution, the Atlanta Daily World, Chicago Defender, Pittsburgh Courier, and all the, you know, big newspapers. And the Ham and Egg Show brought distinguished people to Fort Valley to participate in the program of and it also brought public relations, better public relations between the local people and than they had been before.
Between the local people and the college?
And the college, yes. At that time, you know, we were deeply segregated, and a lot of the people on of color, of white, were afraid to come out here. I didn't want to come out here. But the Ham and Egg Show brought them. It was a program that brought about better relationship between the races. It brought about pride of the producer competing with each other, and it, as it went on, it got to be a big market for the product.
Now, at that time, were the agents like Mr. O'Neill and then later yourself affiliated with the college, or was it just a...
That was the headquarters.
It was headquartered at...
Yeah, for that event especially. We were both here in the county, but my office and his too were downtown. And of course, we had any kind of big program or fairs and whatnot, we would hold it on the campus.
Okay, so you weren't actually employed by the college, but you had a relationship.
We had a relationship there, right. Yes.
And it was a black institution at the time?
Yes, indeed.
Right. Well, that was a really great, you did a wonderful job on that. I appreciate it. It was a good story. Tell me, I'm curious, and this is probably going to show my ignorance, but I'm probably not the only one, but why ham as opposed to some other type of meat, say beef? Was that the primary food source then for the black farmer at the time?
That was the primary meat for ham and chickens for black farmers. They could raise a hog and from the scraps from the kitchen, so to speak. And of course, when he get ready to kill it, he feed it some kind of hard food like corn, oats, wheat, something of that kind. That would give it, you know, firmness away. And just as we call slop hogs, the meat would be of a different quality. And also there's got to be a health problem, you know, with food coming out kitchen sour, you know, being have flies and whatnot, and That's the way it was.
Okay. So there was a greater need for working with ham than with chicken, say, as far as working with the quality of...
It was the greater need, because you could have two or three hens on the farm, on the yard, and that would probably furnish enough eggs for your family. But with hogs, and then you could do that in a shorter time too.
And were hogs also at that time, we're really talking at the 1916, you said, when it founded it. Was it a cash crop at all a cash item for black farmers at that time, as you understood it from Mr. O'Neill? Was it more just subsistence for the family?
Well, the cotton was the main crop in the South for all farmers. Some landowners had their own, some black people had their own farm, and most of the farms were farmed on white plantations, and they allowed them, the tenants, to have hogs and chickens and whatnot, have a garden and whatnot. For the livelihood of the family.
So now, for example, the farmers who are participating in the Ham and Egg Show today in Lowndes County, a lot of them just do hogs kind of on the side, but they sell them. But obviously it was a very different situation, as you describe it, in 1916, in the early 1900s, when you were talking about tenant farmers, people who weren't on their own land, and yeah. it was really... Mr. O'Neill was really doing something for the health and the survival of the families in his county.
Yes.
Okay. Do you happen to know from your own experience or working and hearing him talk about sort of the development of the show concept? There were already at that time, as you mentioned, there would be fairs and other kinds of things that would be held for black farmers. Mm-hmm. Would there be a separate county fair? Was there that kind of structure or any kind of show?
After I came here, we had one or two fairs, and they were all black participants. Where the county agent and the vocational ag teacher, together with the home demonstration agent and the home economics teacher, working together to teach people how to prepare the exhibits and bring them into the farm, into the center, and compete with others. And of course, we solicited prizes for those from the merchants downtown.
But that didn't happen until after you came here. So when in 1948. So when you came, the only, I guess my question is, was the Ham and Egg Show the only kind of organized event for black farmers of that kind, where they all got together and competed at the time that you arrived?
We had what is known as an advisory council. We'd have leaders from each of the communities to come together once a month. We talk about the needs and the problems or whatever of our people. Mm-hmm. And and I would tell them about things that we would like to do. And they would carry it back to the community and disseminate the information to the community people. And that and all of them come together, it just made a nice, you know, gathering, nice socially, economically, et cetera.
Was that something that you instituted, or that was already in place from Mr. O'Neill when you...
The ham and egg show was already in place, and Mr. O'Neill had this organization. I just picked it up and carried it on. Mm-hmm. And I might say, too, that Mr. O'Neill, being a county agent himself, would come to our state meetings. He would talk to us about what he was doing here in the to help people by having the ham and egg show. And we in other counties began to have ham and egg shows. I had, I think, two ham shows down in Jenkins County. I had one in Clark County before I was moved here. And other agents did the same thing. I think there was about probably 30 counties that had little ham and egg shows. Not like this was the daddy, we called it here. And we would have many ham shows in our counties, carrying on the same kind of work that was started by Mr. O'Neill.
The 30 counties that you mentioned, I know this is, your memory seems great to me, by the way, but when you say 30 counties, would that have been roughly the number at the time that you came here, or would that have been during your tenure that it came up to 30 counties?
It had started before I came here, and it continued. I mean, this agent over here would have a situation where he could have a show, and then maybe a year or so later, another one would have another one. I think there's about 30 of us had shows.
At the peak, is that what you're speaking of? At the height of the spread of ham and egg shows?
And it spread not only in Georgia, but it spread into South Carolina, North Carolina, and other southern states. Coach Valdosta was out front with the mini shows, we call them.
Tell me about that.
That J.W. Sanders, who was the county agent in Lowndes County, was a native of Fort Valley. And he came up under Mr. O'Neill as a 4-H club boy. And of course he knew more about what was happening in the ham and egg show business. Therefore he was kind of out front, you know, had the advantage of a lot of others who had never seen a ham show or had any experience. But we were all seeking something that we could have as being outstanding in our program for the county wherever we live.
Did I understand you right? You said Valdosta was out front with the mini shows. Is that what you called them?
He was out front with experiencing, knowing how to operate a ham and egg show because he had been here.
Right.
He grew up here.
I understood that part, but you used a term, I thought, and I was, this is the daddy, right? And
yes.
And the other ones, you used a term for was there a term for all the sort of other shows that If this was the daddy, what did the other ones have?
These we call those mini shows.
Mini shows. Okay, yes. That's what I thought I heard you mm-hmm. say. Okay. Did you know Mr. Sanders then personally?
Oh yes, yes. We were. I used to go down there and hunt. We used to hunt together, and he'd come up here and hunt. Yeah. And all out in the county around Austin, we go over to Thomasville, over there in that Thomas County, and hunt, shoot birds.
Now, under your time, since after you took over from Mr. O'Neill, did you do anything to sort of actively promote the development of ham and egg shows elsewhere? Yeah. Or did people just kind of come to you and, how did that work? How did they spread?
Well, I was much younger at that time, and they were kind of, you know, they didn't want to... Come, want this little boy coming in and telling them about what the ham and egg show is all about. See, so that's putting it, you know, in the simple. Right. I was much younger. Most of them are older. And they figured I didn't know what I was doing. But the help of the good Lord, I fooled them. And we went on to make some changes. We would work with our advisor board, as we call it, to try to get people interested in the county. And I worked with the 4-H Club boys and girls, and we had a poultry chain, what we call a poultry chain. We'd give the kids 50 chickens. And they would take these chickens, we would supervise them, and raise them out. And we'd have a show. And those who... did the best job, they would be awarded. And they would feed the pullets and produce eggs, and they would show the eggs at the ham and egg show. That kept that part of the show going. And of course the ladies would also be working with poultry. And they would exhibit eggs, too. We'd have two divisions, adults and youth.
So did the egg part of the ham and egg show come later then? Are you telling me that this was something that was added under your watch, or was
it was already in the show. That was already a part of the show. Okay. But we got the chain came through the 4-H Club. Okay. I believe after I came here.
Okay. How did one thing you didn't mention, what was your understanding from Mr. O'Neill about how the egg part was it known as ham and egg show from the beginning?
Yes, ma'am. From the beginning.
So he spoke about the eggs, but the ham you did, but the eggs was the woman's piece of it.
Women and the children and the youth that was there. We tried to get them to, you know, exhibit, and we taught them how to clean the eggs and how to grade them, and all those things. Okay. And they competed.
Okay. So as you described it, Mr. O'Neill saw that there was a need for the hams in terms of better quality and so forth. What was the how did the eggs get included in it then in the beginning?
That was, you know, that's a southern dish. Ham, eggs, grits. And, of course, you want to have quality there also. Fresh eggs. Excuse me. Clean eggs. And if you're going to sell them, you get them graded also. So, carry a few eggs to town on Saturday and sell them to the grocers, exchange them for groceries and things of that kind, see.
So at that time, that was an outlet for cash for the women of on the black women on the farm that they would, like women everywhere, they would sell eggs. And so this was to...
All those that were in the program, of course, yes. Especially, we emphasized that would be a means of income for, and also they sold chickens. The roosters, they had no use for the roosters. And so they would put them in a pen and fatten them, so we call them, fatten them up and peddle them around through the community, as far as that's concerned. People that didn't have one would buy a chicken, buy a dozen eggs, and so forth.
At the time that Mr. O'Neill came in 1916, I know you were alive, but quite young at that time, was it usual to have a black county extension agent at that point across Georgia, as far as you understand? No.
No, he was...
You said the first in Peach County, but I was wondering if you had a sense of, you know, across the state and region, was he a pioneer? And that may not be something you know, but how widespread it was to have...
extension agent.
In the black community.
Well, there were few in number in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then as time went on, they, you know, had more and more. When I was a kid, up in Athens, Clark County, we had a black agent. They had another one in... Let's see, as I remember, even when I started to work, I think they had one in one year, one in Americus, Georgia, and one in Valdosta, and one up in Meriwether County, Frank Spencer's up there, and spotted. They were spotted throughout the state. But as time went on, they Burke County, Jenkins County, and other counties, Willow County, Chatham, all those. Agents were appointed.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think, the show ended here in 1966. We supposedly have the last one in the state still going on in Lowndes County now, and they're actually trying to expand it, and they had more participation in this year than they have in previous years, so they're really trying to keep that one going. What is your sense of the reason that they stopped in most places in the state?
Well, first place, that's a lot of work. It's a lot of work in conducting a ham and egg show. I would always start at the end of one, get next day, I'd start on one for the next year. Planning, making contacts, and et cetera, et cetera. But and also, we had other responsibilities. You know, where the Boll Weevil came, and the Cotton, King Cotton lost his hold. And you had to have other programs to try to keep the economy up edge for people to have a living, make a living. And then a lot of guys just let it go. And then another thing, that reason why it went down, out of farmers, abandoned the farm, went to the city. And so we had a decrease. A lot of farmers who were supporters of the shows lost their farms, lost the land, and that had its effect on them. But the Fort Valley Ham and Egg Show was supported by the state, and all our publicity went through the state, all our programs were printed up at Athens in the state. And they say that they thought that with the conditions that the ham and egg show was no longer a novelty for farmers. And they felt like that the state should back off. And so they did.
This would be what, the main cooperative extension office at University of Georgia? Is that what we're talking about when you say state in Athens?
Yes. Okay. That was the Fort Valley show.
Right.
And now I don't know how much cooperation the other shows got from the state office.
Was there ever, in your experience, anything comparable or parallel to this in the white community during the period of segregation? Any attempts to imitate it, or some sort of other type show that you wanted to have the similar opportunities for black farmers that white farmers had during the early years?
Well, they had the Peach Festival here. This is Peach County, and that was purely white.
Was there an agricultural show that you were aware of? I don't know, focusing on livestock or, fairs that were, segregated that only whites went to, and so this was...
No, I mean, here, as I remember, livestock shows were not segregated. I mean, if you had some good livestock, you could exhibit it. And prizes went to both black and white.
During the early period when you first came, are we speaking about when you came here or even your experiences growing up before you arrived at Fort Valley? When you said there were livestock shows were not segregated, what time period are we talking about? From the beginning, or?
Well, from the time I was when I became a county agent, when the time I participated, we had the livestock shows in Augusta, in Savannah, and then we had livestock shows locally. We show our and the prize, best animals would go to the bigger shows, on up like that. And if you had the best, you had the best.
But that was just for cattle, not for hogs.
Yeah, she had hogs and cattle. Okay. Hogs and cattle both were mostly at the fairs, at the county fairs or the state fairs and whatnot.
And those were segregated?
No, I don't think so.
No?
Yes, I remember they were not.
Did you ever have white farmers who wanted to participate in the ham and egg show?
No. None expressed to me that they wanted to. But they encouraged people that lived on the farm, tenants, to, I don't know whether they fed the hogs or how, but they encouraged them to participate.
Anything else you want to add? I told you a half an hour, and I think we might have taken a little longer. That's anything else you
go right ahead.
Anything else you'd like to add that I haven't asked you that you think is important?
Well, as I said, we added the 4-H Club talent show as a part of the 3-day program. The program started on Thursday. Farmers would bring the meat in, and it would be judged by a specialist from the university, and it would be displayed, and the program will start Friday. They have a showing of the exhibit. Then that night we'd have a supper for the persons who exhibited, or the farmers who were, and their wives and children who were participants or members of the advisory council. And we would, next day we would have a program at 11 o'clock where we bring in specialists to have forums, talks, and we'd bring 4-H just in to do some, you know, essay dancing or some kind of pageant or demonstrating the value of the ham and egg show, the value of producing food for the soldiers who were in the war and things of that kind.
So you said that's the talent show that you spoke of, the 4-H involvement then?
Yes. And then the last, they culminate the show, after we had the prizes awarded and the sale, we'd have a sale. We'd bring the buyers in and we'd have dinner set up for them. And we bring special guests, black, another place. We'd have a dinner set up for them, and we'd have the auctioneer. He would be there, and we'd have something else in there. The sale, the auction of the hams would be the big thing that Friday. Auction of the, you know, the hams, especially the prize ham.
And you were talking about the talent show. That was something that you instituted when you took over the show.
Yes, we made the sale, and those are the changes I made in trying to perpetuate the show.
So I'm still not sure that the talent show took place on Saturday?
On Friday night.
After the dinner?
After the sale, yes, ma'am.
After the dinner?
No, after the sale.
Okay.
Then doing Friday, doing the morning session, we'd have them to come in and probably give a little pageant or something of that kind. Demonstrating the importance of raising food for the family and things of that kind.
Okay, and then tell me a little more about the talent show and who was involved and what kinds of things happened.
Well, some kids could sing, some could dance, some play piano, some could do imitations, and that was about it, I guess.
And this was the members of the 4-H?
Yes, those were the members of the 4-H.
So you instituted the talent show and
sale.
And so does that mean that you were the person who kind of pioneered that part of the show, and then other agents around the state picked that up?
I felt like to come to do all that work and come to the show, and one person would get the first prize, and one get the second prize, and you get a big prize for that. I thought that wasn't enough. I mean, the other people, if they could, we didn't encourage them to take away from the family, but with the sale. With an auctioneer to bid, you know, let them bid on what, I mean, let them receive what their hands brought. They could take it home and buy furniture, buy clothing or whatever they need.
Right.
It's a matter of getting a little money back to them, see, if to improve the quality of living.
So the auctioneer... obviously, the people buying would be people from the white community.
Mostly white. Mm-hmm. And Mr. P.L. Hay would always buy them. We didn't care who bid, he'd outbid them for the first prize ham. And the hams went up as high as $15 a pound.
And who was he? Mr. P.L. Hay?
P.L. Hay went from the Bankers Life Insurance Company. His grandson, Mr. Anderson, after he passed, took over the plant. His son-in-law took it over. And then his son, on down through the years, were big buyers, big-time buyers. They wouldn't let nobody outbid them. So... made a little history there. So I mean, we had such few farmers here to participate, and the extension felt like they had, I mean, their state office had done their part in promoting the show. And we had a lot of good friends on there from the news media. Miss Sue Meyer from Macon Telegraph was a very good friend of ours. And she, they supported with money and with publicity. And that's the way it was.
So at its peak then, the show was over 3 days. They'd come in on Thursday, set it up. You'd have Friday and then Saturday. Right?
No, it's Friday and Friday night.
The peak was
Friday at the sale. And the 4-H show was standing room only at that night. And that concluded.
Okay. I thought you said, though, that it was a 3-day program.
Yeah.
Did I misunderstand you? I wrote down you had said it was a 3-day program, but it was just two. Thursday and Friday,
and of course, now when Mr. O'Neill had it, they had a wasn't a jazz show, but it was a folk singing on Sunday. But I never had a folk show.
Was there ever anything on Saturday? Not even under Mr. O'Neill, as you...
Well, say, yeah, they did have something on Saturday. They'd have this folk show on Saturday and Sunday. It was more or less old folk music with the washboard and the things of that kind. But on Sunday it was singing. It was a singing group.
Like church music or?
Yes, ma'am.
Gospel or?
Gospel music, more or less. But that, you know, we had to, at that time, they had to raise money to bring those people in, and I just felt like I couldn't do it. And they had to give them prizes, you know, and all that. So I never had a folk show, never had a
Is that what it was called, a folk show? That was the term for it?
Yes, that was the last, that was concluded during his time.
Mm-hmm. And I understood that these wouldn't necessarily be local people. They would be people from the outside that they would bring in for
yes,
this?
Yes, they would bring people in from all around who had famous choirs, famous musicians. W.C. Handy was here, and somebody else. I can't remember. But this always had one particular star, you know, come along with the others would fill in. They had musicians out of Atlanta. I mean, special, you know, a special kind of music, classical, et cetera. Piano players, singers.
Jazz?
Jazz and all that.
I'll have to see if they have any clippings on that, see who came. That's
interesting. I had some clippings here somewhere. It's in there. It must be in that library of different ones who participated in the folk show. And Miss Dr. Taylor can she's... She's got all that stuff. I know I couldn't, I had no place to keep it, so I just handed it over to her.
Well, that was smart, so it's safe. So,
yeah.
So, but that aspect of it, when you took over, you didn't continue, but you added instead the sale and the talent show. So there wasn't an auction and a sale part of it in Mr. O'Neill's time, as you understood
it. I don't think so.
Okay.
It was talked about, but I don't think it never materialized. The only thing they during this time was the prize hen. They had a sale for the prize hen, but I took the whole shebang. And anybody wanted to sell, they'd they'd say, I want to bring in 10 hams, and I want to sell 5 of them. We put them aside, put their names on and everything, numbers and whatnot. Then, and that number come up, auctioneer would auction it off, and we give them the money. They gave us 2% of whatever the sale come to. I mean, for hamming it, you know.
The farmers would.
Yes. And we got along pretty good. The merchants were very nice to us. Banks, what I would make donations, you know, for us to give the prizes. Other expense, you know, that you have, building the stage and the displaying, night watchman, insurance. Yeah, we'd miss a few sometime. But we expected it, and we were prepared for it, and had insured. And it was a holiday, that Friday. It was a holiday for all the schools in the county.
What time of year was it held?
It was anywhere from February, last of February till the 1st of April is during that time. Different years, different. I might have an old program here. Would you like to have it?
If you don't have a use for it, I'd be pleased. But
I might.
Here, wait, but you're hooked up here. Let me unhook you. Oh, yeah. Right, and you've got to get it through your suspender there. Excuse me. Okay.
This gentleman here he's a winner.
Okay. This newspaper from the Leader Tribune, published in Fort Valley on Thursday, March 11th, 1965. Sale on March 5th. All records were broken for this event when Mr. Albert McCowan paid $15.50 per pound for the ham, which came to a total of $267.38. The Grand Champion eggs were bought by Mr. S. M. Wayless, manager of the Fort Valley supermarket, for $40 per dozen. Mr. Wayless also purchased the reserve champion ham at a price of $3 per pound. This was the 49th annual Fort Valley Ham and Egg Show. Do you need some water? I just had one more question. Are you doing okay, or do you need some water, or to take a break, or I just?
No. I have a bounce when I walk.
Okay.
Kind of staggered up.
Okay. Okay. So the last question I wanted to ask is just a little bit about the background of someone like yourself, and then perhaps what you may know of Mr. O'Neill, your predecessor. You told me you went to school at, was it Hampton or Tuskegee? I'm having...
Went to school to ninth grade in Clark County. And my principal wanted me to go to Hampton. So I went to Hampton. Into 10th grade. That was in 1927. And I finished high school in 30. And I went from there, I went to college there. 3 weeks after I got to Hampton, they had a strike. And I didn't know, I was a country boy, you know, I followed the crowd. Got on a train, came back home. The closer I got home, the worse I felt, because I know what my parents were. They'd been trying to get me, you know, they had poor communications. They tell me, don't come home, don't come home. When I got there, they told me about it. And, they asked me if I wanted to go back, and I told them yes, I did. So I went back. I think I came home when I finished high school, and I went back to college. I didn't come home until I finished.
And so you graduated in what year? You graduated from Hampton College in
1934.
And what was your degree in?
B.S. Ag Education.
Okay. And prior to that, I assume were you living on a farm in Clark County then?
Yes, ma'am. So my daddy was an overseer, a lead farmer on a plantation.
So you yourself had experience?
I got the experience of plowing a mule, shaking peanuts, picking cotton, cutting hay.
Raising hogs?
Raising hogs, yes, indeed. When I went to Hampton, we had to have a project, and I took hogs. And I was about $300 and something behind in my vote, but they let me stay. And when I sold my hogs back to the college, to the dining hall, I had paid them and I had $100 left. And I came back to Georgia. When I got ready to go to, I worked in New Hampshire all the summers from 1927 to 1933. Before then, Bob Cousin came to Hampton and he said he wanted to see all the Georgia graduates. And he told us that we would have a job in Georgia. Come on back.
So I got. And who was he? Mr. Cousins, what was his position?
His position, he was a supervisor of Negro education in Georgia, state supervisor. And when I got ready to leave, I packed up to leave to go, got a telegram from there. My boss in New Hampshire, he was in New York at the time, tell me he was going where he'd meet us in New York. I got a boss, got a telegram from Mr. Tabor saying that he had a job for me in Georgia. So I chose to come to Georgia.
What were you doing in New Hampshire in the summers?
Ma'am.
What job were you doing in the summers in New Hampshire?
I worked at a summer camp up there on Lake Winnipesaukee. And some of us were cooks, waiters. I was a cabin boy at cleaning cabins daily. And other chores, you know, that had to be done. And we made a little money there. And when I came back in 32, I had about $100 left to go to school after I paid my, you know, entrance fee. And I worked in the dining hall. I cleaned classrooms. I was a night watchman. I collected shoes for the boys. You know, we was half-soled in shoes and heels and all that. I was working with the Askew shoe shop. I collected shoes. Carried him, he fixed him, and I got a commission there. And we were there at Old Point Comfort. Steamships, you know, come in there and had to be loaded. Spring, especially with clams and taters, whatnot, whatever, beef or whatever, in barrels, you know. And we had a Georgia buggy, we called that wheelbarrow. And we had to go up that blank, up that ramp and dump those barrels and come back and get another. And you had to go. You had to get out the next man way because everybody's trying to get to the top. Because if you stop on in the middle, all of you would be dumped over in the sea. So it was rough, but I was strong.
It must have been quite a change for someone raised in the country and in middle Georgia to go up to New Hampshire, huh?
It's the most beautiful. You've been there?
Yeah, it is beautiful.
You have?
Yes.
It's the most beautiful country up in the world. I mean, lakes and flowers and scenery and whatnot. It's just beautiful. We were Lake Squam, Lake Winnipesaukee, and another lake up there we used to go. But all that was quite an experience. And you met people who were professors at Harvard, bankers at Boston, New York, and steamship owners. Bill Clyde was a young man that I'd learned to, I was associated with. I used to clean his cabin. And if I got any type of money, I'd tell him, he'd send it to me. The Gillette Brothers, Gillette Razor, I waited on, I took care of that cabin. They always give me a nice tip when they left. And the Van Sinderen family, I believe is in Connecticut. I think they live in Connecticut. They paid my tuition. And
how did that connection with New Hampshire come about then? How did you get that job up there? Did they come?
How'd
to
I get the job?
Did they come to Hampton or?
The school got jobs for the boys and the girls who wanted to work, who needed to work, and these people. Camps and steamship. Some of the boys went on the steamship as waiters and whatnot. Some went to the tobacco farms in Connecticut. And some went to camps. Some went to various hotels, big hotels, and recreational places up north. And it was quite an experience.
Well, just getting back to your being raised on the farm in Clark County, when you later went in and were working with black farmers to improve the quality of the, you know, the meat and the hams that they produced, were there any particular traditional ways of you know, smoking or curing hams that you remember from your own experience growing up that were things that you had to work with to change in the ham and egg show, or in the hams that, you know, through the work you did later as an extension agent?
Well, my dad was considered one of the better farmers in Clark County.
And what was his name?
Arthur Church. Mm-hmm. And we never, I don't ever remember going to bed hungry. He was a gardener, he was a farmer, raised hogs. We always had chickens for eggs. We had all that. And he killed, we'd have a community hog killing. And it was always at our house, because, not at our house, but near our house, because we had a big spring there for water, fresh water, for where we are. That would be, we as children, we had to keep that fire burning and that hot water so we could scald those hogs when they, after they bring them there. We started this farmer's house and kill his and bring them and dress them. Go back and get another one until it's finished up. It's an all-day job, sometimes two-day jobs, according to how many they had. And I just learned to love it, dealing with hogs. And it followed me on down. I never thought I would be at Fort Valley, although I had opportunity to come here. When the first, Fort Valley first became a land-grant college, I was offered a job here in the agriculture department. But I was teaching vocational ag, and I was making more money than they could give me. So I had a family, and so finally worked around, and I got you. Ham and egg show.
Well, I really appreciate the time that you've taken with me today. What I'd like to do is just go back. I'm going to turn the tape recorder off, unless there's anything else you'd like to add. And I just want to make sure I've got some of the names spelled right of some of the people that you've mentioned to the best of your recollection. Is there anything else you want to add here?
Well, I just want to say that I had, after the people learned me and they had confidence in me, both black and white, I was successful in carrying on the tradition, and I was successful in bringing important people from Secretary of Agriculture, Washington, D.C., down to presidents of various colleges and dignitaries from University of Georgia, and just a wonderful experience that farmers worked with me very closely, and they believed in what I told them, and I'm just proud to be, have had that experience.
When you mentioned bringing the various dignitaries here, was that to the Ham and Egg Show in particular, or just to the program that you developed here in general?
Particular to the Ham and Egg Show. Okay. That was a big event. Mm-hmm. People would write me saying they're going to be coming through, going to Florida, and ask me what time the show was going to be. They would want to stop by. They read about it in the paper. And in the magazines and whatnot. And they come. And then a lot of the dignitaries we invite, you know, we invite the Dean Tate from university, Mr. Bill Sutton, Mr. Walter Brown, and the specialists who would come and judge the hams and judge the eggs and whatnot. And sometimes they'd bring the families. We had the governor, from Herman Talmadge. And we had the one after him. I know I had two governors to come, and they would be on the special program, speakers and whatnot, and that's why Mr. Talmadge got his idea. You're a Talmadge ham. Got his idea right over there. He came down here and he saw what we were doing. Went back home and started him a business, a million dollar business. I write him for a contribution to help us out. He sent me $10. I wanted to send it back to him, but I didn't. I helped him to make $1 million, and he gave me $10. It's rough, but I stood it. These people who have given me these awards, they got the information from somewhere. And History Makers in Chicago in 2002. And the other award in George Washington Carver Award in Tuskegee, 2003.
And you retired, you said, in 1960.
Hmm.
You retired in 1960.
69. I took an early retirement. Things were kind of rough, and I could do just as well retired as I could working. Yet I went on into other things that were work just as hard. I was on city council for 2 terms, 8 years. I was with the Family and Children's Services for 25 years. And I was with Selective Service and church work, you know, chairman of the Mission Fund. I distribute funds to the needy and of course you saw a lot of my plaques in there that I have. Of course I have several around I haven't put up yet. So I've done my work.
Just one clarification, the judges that you brought in for the show And maybe, I don't know if you know about the type of person that Mr. O'Neill was able to bring in. Now, when I go to the show, you know, they're bringing in Mr. Hill, Glenwood Hill, who I'm sure you know.
Glenwood Hill, yeah. I did shows in Valdosta.
You did?
Years ago. Mm-hmm. That's when J.W. was county agent.
Were the judges usually also, would they have been black, or would there have been, white people coming in to grade in Judge Ham's during the early days, or was it been mostly experts who were from the black community?
The exhibitors were black, but the whites were there to buy.
But what about as the judge?
And judges and things of that kind.
They would be white as well as black?
I think so now. I don't know. I know I was judged there. I think I judged two times. And
you're talking in Valdosta.
Huh?
In Valdosta.
In Valdosta.
But what about the show here that you're familiar with? Would the judges have been white or black or both during your time?
That was a long time. I don't remember, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Tell you the truth, okay. I don't remember. But I know the buyers and were there.
Okay. You mentioned a Margaret Trumbull, I think.
Tuma.
How do you spell the last name?
T-O-O-M-E-R.
T-O-O-M-E-R. Okay. And W.T. Anderson, who was the owner of the Macon Telegraph.
Yes,
I got
ma'am.
That right. Okay, and
the Atlanta Constitution worked with us.
Right. J.W. Sanders. In the man. It was Robert Cousins, is that the?
Yes.
C-O-U-S?
I-N.
Okay. And who actually hired you the first time here?
Mr. Tabor, Albert Tabor hired me. He was the state supervisor of vocational agriculture for Negroes.
And Albert?
Alva, A-L-V-A.
A-L-V-A. And the last name was Tabor?
Tabor, T-A-B-E-R.
T-A-B-O-R. T-A-B-O-R. Okay. Oh. Okay. I think those are the ones I needed to clarify. Mm-hmm. So, ready to turn it off?
When you are.